Welcome back, everyone, to the XCast X-Files Podwatch. This is episode 84, and today we are talking about Patience and Roadrunners from season 8. I am Tony Black, hosting, and with me once again is Mr. Darren Mooney. How are you, Darren?
I'm grand since the last time we talked, which I'm guessing is about 12 hours ago, if even.
Yeah, it's a bit longer for us, but for you guys, yeah, it's probably about 12 hours, something like that, because obviously...
It's quite possible they moved the X-Files schedule back up since we recorded this, and in fact, last time you heard us podcast together was like 2 minutes ago, as Tony's frantically trying to get everything out on time.
Yes, because since we recorded Within and Without, of course, the release date for the X-Files has been released, the new season, and now we're having two pod watches a day, which you've been experiencing for quite a while, dear listeners, so I'm terribly sorry, because you're probably massively behind and saying, "What the hell, Tony?" But the roller coaster is nearly at an end because we're approaching the last couple of seasons, and this is season 8. So let's launch into this one, and we're starting with Patience, which is the third episode of the 8th season of the X-Files, which sees Scully with her new partner, Special Agent John Doggett, traveling to deepest Idaho to investigate the murder of a married couple by what appears to be a Batman, or maybe a man-sized bat would be better, more appropriate than the Caped Crusader. Darren, Patience, what do you think of this one?
I don't hate it as much as most people seem to. I think that there's a very strong sort of contingent online of people who think it's boring and it's not great, and it's a middle-of-the-road subpar Monster of the Week, and it's not the way that you want to start off a season without Mulder, because this is the first episode that, first of all, doesn't feature David Duchovny's name in the opening credits, but also doesn't feature Mulder. It's the first episode of the 8th season without Mulder in it at all. And I actually quite like it. I think it's not perfect, but I think it does what it sets out to do relatively well, which is, A, it sort of sets a tone for the 8th season as a whole. It's written and directed by Chris Carter, and it's a lot darker than the show was during the 6th and 7th seasons. Like, there's a lot of black in here, right down to the opening scene where you have, like, the Undertaker murdered, where it's at night, but he's wearing a pitch black suit, and he's an Undertaker, and he's attacked by a giant bat monster. It's as if the show is, you know, the show's maybe hammering the point a little bit too much. It's like the start of the 6th season where you had, like, the characters standing around in the middle of the Arizona desert just to say, "Hey, we're going bright this year." This is very much like, "Hey, we're going super dark this year." And I quite like that. Like, I like that the 8th season has this sort of darkness running through it, both literally and metaphorically, and that it sort of feels like the show's trying to get back to the first season. And actually, like, this is one of the things about Patience that I quite like, is that it is very clearly modelled on Squeeze. Mm. And I mean, in terms of, obviously, you have, for example, Doggett joining the X-Files and then having to decide, basically, his life outside the X-Files versus inside the X-Files. Like, you have those small scenes with him and his friends, which recall Scully's scenes with her and her friends back in Squeeze, which sort of gives an indication that, like, before these characters go on the X-Files, they actually have friends and lives and stuff, and you can sort of see Doggett's arc mapped out from there. But even stuff like the monster, for example, being a creature that is attacking after an extended period of quiet, like, you know, they're investigating a case that has, like, a massive gap between the last series of attacks that correspond to this, which in many ways sort of recalls the format of Squeeze. And I also just like that it's Carter doing, like, this is basically a Universal monster movie as well, so this has got that sort of, like, Dracula type feeling to it, this sort of, like, the stuff that you got when he did The Host, you know, The Host with Darren Morgan in the Fluke Man suit, which is basically, if you're doing a modern day Universal horror, like A Creature from the Black Lagoon, this sort of really has that feel to it. And I kind of like that about it. And I like that, like, all of this is put up front as well, which is a very nice way of doing the season.
Yeah, it's quite a simple opening, really, isn't it? That sort of sets, like you said, sets out the store. It was written and directed by Chris Carter. So, you know, it wasn't very often that he would write and direct a, you know, the episode after the premiere episodes of the seasons, which kind of shows that he's trying to put, you know, his own stamp on where season 8's going, and he seems a little bit more invested in this than maybe he was in, you know, season 6 and 7, in terms of, you know, which were pretty much the status quo. But this is a whole new world, really, and I think him writing and directing is him sort of saying, right, okay, well, I'm trying to take the show back, as you said, to basics, and to get this, you know, new mission statement off the ground. And I think that's why there are certain things in this, you know, you mentioned about Doggett's friends, and, you know, his, the beginnings of him starting to work with Scully. You know, there's also that undercurrent of sexism amongst the, you know, the male detectives, that they go and find in Idaho, you know, there's the Detective Abbott who basically just turns his back on Scully and he's talking to Doggett like, you know, man to man kind of thing. And it's just a woman, which you used to find in earlier seasons of The X-Files, you know, in episodes like Too Shy, where there was that real level of sexism. So it's interesting that that's come back with now you've got this new, not quite alpha male, because that makes Doggett out to sound like a real idiot, but it's, and he's not, but he's more of a rugged masculine kind of figure, I suppose, certainly the Mulder. So it's interesting that those elements start creeping back in how Carter is writing and portraying Doggett and Scully.
Yeah, Doggett is very consciously a blue-collar character in contrast to Mulder's white-collar character, and that Mulder, like, went to Oxford to study criminology, for example. And it's quite clear that Mulder comes from money, you know, despite the fact that he lives from paycheck to paycheck in Monday. But generally speaking, the Mulder family is connected and wealthy, and he studied abroad, whereas Doggett, you get a sense that Doggett, like, he worked up as a beef cop. You get a sense that, like, he studied for exams by night. You can imagine, you can read in his life there. He was a Marine, for example, and stuff like that. Like, you have this sort of sense of, like, Doggett sort of pulled himself up, and Doggett has this sort of... You're right when you say you don't want to say sort of... You're right when you don't want to classify it as sort of like a sort of a bro thing. It's more a machismo sort of quality, but it's not even that, because he does... And one of the things I really like about Patience, and it's one of the things I really like about the characterization of Doggett in general, is the idea that, like, Doggett is incredibly deferential to Scully. Like, he reads all the case files, and it comes up again and again and again over the course of the season. Like, Doggett does his homework before he joins the X-Files, and, like, when he teams up with Scully in this case, he actually has, like, a... He defers to her judgment. He understands that he's a new guy. He's not an adversary. He doesn't jockey for position. He doesn't try and, like, impose himself on her or on the investigative unit. It's not like, this is my show now. It's like, no, I understand I'm the junior partner here, and I'm respectful of what you do, which I think is an interesting dynamic, because when you had Scully join Mulder, Mulder was obviously a little bit suspicious for a little while, And Scully was obviously inexperienced and sort of like, so she wasn't assertive or whatever. Whereas Mulder was like, gung-ho, I've got sideshows, this is what we're doing this week. So you have, with Scully and Doggett, you have a different dynamic where Scully herself is the one who doubts. Scully doubts herself more than Doggett doubts her, which is a very interesting dynamic for the pair of them.
Yeah, that's a really nice way of putting it, actually. Definitely. And I think what I like about this episode, you know, all the monster stuff is fine. You know, the way it's shot is fine. But I think what makes Patience... You know, I think a fairly good episode is the Doggett and Scully interaction, and the fact you get from the beginning point where Scully obviously finds it really, really difficult to have this new guy as her partner. You know, Mulder's still out there, he's still missing. She's got to just get on with the day job, to the point where she by the end, she puts Mulder's desk name in the drawer. You know, it's that way of saying, okay, well, I've got a new partner now. And by the end, she has a bit more acceptance of Doggett, whereas throughout the episode, there's a real reticence, even though he is bending over backwards, and he's been really great. He's not shouldering his way in. He's trying to find his place in something that is so out of his depth. You know, it's a completely different world from the one he's ever been used to. And I really like what Carter does with their relationship here. You know, by the end, you feel like they've reached the starting point of a partnership, as opposed to the beginning where Scully didn't have any idea how to do this with somebody else after so long and such an involvement with Mulder. And I really like that about Patience. The rest of it is fairly throwaway, but that, I think, is the core, and that works really well in this one.
Yeah, and I think the eighth season as a whole does that really well, in that it understands that the audience isn't going to accept Doggett straight away. Like, it understands the process is like a gradual period of adjustment. So you have, like, and that the season is very well structured, in that it's a very much a three-act structure, where you have, like, the first eight or so episodes up to Via Negativa are all about, like, how the hell do we do this with Doggett? Like, how does Scully adapt to Doggett being there? How does Doggett adapt to Doggett being there? And then you have, like, a middle section where they solve cases, and then you have a final third where, like, spoiler, Mulder comes back, and you then have to figure out what the deal is from there. But it gives the season a nice structure, and I like that, like, Patience, like, the title of Patience almost seems like a kind of a plea to the audience, or sort of like a statement to the audience saying, like, trust us to take this, like, we know what maybe we don't know what we're doing, but we have an idea of what we're doing, and we'll get there in the end.
Give us time.
And, like, I really, really like that. Yeah, that's it, exactly. And I think that they earn that over the course of the season. I think that even here, you can see that they are trying, and they're working really hard to justify, like, the faith and the patience of people watching. And I think it pays off down the line.
Absolutely. I couldn't say that better myself. That's very true. So thank you, listeners, for having patience as we talk about this. But we're going to move on now to the next episode of Season 8, Roadrunners. So yeah, Roadrunners aired in November 2000, a week after Patience, and was written by Vince Gilligan, directed by Rod Hardy, who is a director who was a first-time director on the season. He directed Salvage and then Vianen later in the season. So he's a new director to the show. But obviously Vince Gilligan is one of the old favourites. And this episode sees Scully ending up investigating a mysterious murder in the remotest area of Utah as Doggy is back in Washington. And she gets caught up in, one of the weirdest cases, I think, the X-Files ever did, involving a very, very strange cult and a really bizarre creature. I mean, if ever an episode summed up what they were trying to do with season 8, I mean, it's Roadrunners.
It's fantastic. It's brilliant. Rod Hardy only directed 3 episodes of the show. He directed this one. I think he directed Salvage as well. And then he also directed Vienen. And I think that, like, 2 of his 3 episodes are amazing.
Yes.
And I think that, like, this one is fantastic because it's just such a grisly, nasty piece of television that is so delightfully weird. It's the only script that Gilligan wrote for the 8th season because he went off to work on The Lone Gunman after this point. It's sort of a shame because he writes a really good Doggett, even though this is a Scully-centric episode. But like, what I love about, there's so much that I love about Roadrunners, right down to just the weirdness of the small town that's sort of dying because it got cut off by the interstate. So you have that sort of wonderful small town X-Files quality to it. You have the eeriness of, like, Scully wandering through and seeing, like, people praying and just sort of being watched and sort of getting a sense, like, Scully figures out quite early on that there's something weird going on, but she doesn't figure out how weird because it's a banana slug that they think is Jesus Christ. I love that the episode just sort of takes, like, Scully's sense of skepticism and says, well, okay, if you push that even further, you end up with this wonderful, crazy concept. But it also does this thing that the 8th season does a lot. And I think it's really the first example in a standalone episode where you have this theme of body horror. Like, because this is a parasitic slug that they insert into somebody's spine. And it's a wonderful special effect. The banana slug is a fantastically creepy and unnerving special effect, particularly when it's in the back and it's wriggling and they have the little tail protruding out. It's a fantastic practical sort of, like, we talked about on Patience how the X-Files, the 8th season was getting back to this sort of basic, sort of dark and disturbing and nightmarish sort of stuff. Like, the 8th season doesn't really have a comedy episode unless you count, like, the supporting character in Alone. And even that is an episode where a lizard man blinds people and eats them. So, like, this is a very dark season of television. And, like, Roadrunners just sort of grabs it and runs with it. So you have, like, Scully at one point fearing that something has been inserted into her body and she doesn't know what it is. And it's been put there by people she doesn't know and people she doesn't trust. And she's no idea what it's doing or what it's going to do. And you have this sort of idea that maybe this is like an analogy or a metaphor for the pregnancy that she's carrying at the moment. Where she has no idea what that is either. And she's not entirely sure how it got there, even though, you know, later on we come to accept that it was Mulder. But, like, you have this sort of wonderful body horror theme that simmers through the season, particularly in, say, episodes like Badla, where bodies are transformed and distorted and things are put into them that don't necessarily belong in them. And it's just really unnerving and really uncomfortable and really squidgy and really sort of, like, the scenes in this, you squirm.
Yeah.
Like, you actually squirm. They're very, it's not even that they're graphic, but they're very well shot by Rod Hardy, who I believe directed, like, horror movies when he was in Australia. Like, there's a wonderful shot, and it's a shot that I always remember. It isn't the slug itself. It's the scene where the guy on crutches comes up to the Greyhound bus, and it's like, okay, my time is done here. And everybody picks up a stone.
Oh.
And they smash him, but it's done in this wonderfully sort of very theatrical fashion where the blood splatters on the grey surface of the bus. Mm. It's like this wonderfully artsy, grotesque sort of, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre type shot. It's just beautifully, beautifully made. And even the shots at the end where Doggett is carrying Scully out into the middle of the road as the police cars sort of sweep up and the camera pulls back. It's just, it's a wonderfully constructed piece of television. And it's like, it's a great example of the show still being capable of making what is effectively a movie on a weekly television schedule and budget. It's remarkable.
Yeah, definitely. And also being really scary and really creepy. And it's something that we hadn't seen them do for years. I mean, I think you'd have to go back quite some way to find an episode creepier and weirder than this in the X-Files that is a straight up kind of episode.
I think that, for example, this was the episode to get one of, there were two episodes in the 8th season that got viewer discretion warnings, and I believe that was the first time that they got them since Home. Mm.
Yeah.
Which gives you a sense of what we're dealing with here.
That makes sense, Home, definitely. So you're talking 4 seasons, you know, you're talking a long time, and the show has changed so much since then, you know, and so much has happened to these characters. So to get back to that point where you've got Scully in the middle of this really weird, nightmarish scenario with, like you said, all these fantastic, you know, really sort of horror visuals, you know, and icky, you know, icky scenes, you know, it's just squidgy. You were right, squidgy moments, like where you got the gaping wound in her back and you can see the slug, you know, going up her spine and she's screaming in agony and you just, oh my God, this is just really horrible, but in a really effective way. And I think what I also love about it is that much as, yes, we know that they believe the slug is Christ, but you never find out where that slug comes from. You know, you never find the genesis of that thing. There's no hint whatsoever how these people came together with a slug that they think is Jesus. And I love that, because sometimes the X-Files does try and apply some level of explanation. And in this case, Scully has no idea. You know,
yeah, just there's no context for it.
Because there isn't a Mulder as well. This is the key thing. There is no Mulder to say, yeah, well, Scully, this slug is probably from the ancient, you know, Egyptian sarcophagus of Kutumu, you know, or whatever.
If you look at the hieroglyphics, you can see it and chart its movement across the mythologies of Asia and North America. I also like the small town sort of nature, because this is very much a small town X-Files in the style of, say, Our Town or whatever. And I like the idea, and it feels a little pointed in the way that Gilligan scripts when he writes them. Gilligan seems like the nicest man on earth, just in general. When you hear interviews and when you hear about people who work with him and you hear about people who've interacted with him, I'm sure he's a lovely guy. He seems like one of the genuinely pleasant human beings who never has anything bad to say about anybody, but he has a really mean streak that occasionally comes out in his scripts. He's got this sort of darker side, as you can imagine watching Breaking Bad. And like, there's this element of Roadrunners that seems in some ways to be commenting on maybe like small town America, because this is a small town that's been cut off by the interstate and has been sort of bypassed by modernity and basically has decided to invest its faith in something that is horrific and grotesque. Like, they've chosen to accept that this banana slug that seems to kill anybody it inhabits is the second coming of Jesus Christ, that it will offer them salvation. And it's just this really biting, I think, sort of commentary on like a certain type of mentality, perhaps. Like, there's an undercurrent here in the way that there isn't a lot of horror, which feels quite biting and cynical and like really aggressive. And I quite like that about the episode.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that, you know, and it comes out in the really sort of haunting way in a lot of these characters, you know, play around Scully. You know, you've got like Lawrence Pressman, who I remember from Deep Space Nine, strangely enough, mainly playing a
big cuddly teddy bear that he is.
Exactly. There. But he's really, you know, he's just that kind of zealot, you know, that creepy sort of old granddad looking zealot, and surrounded by people who you basically don't speak, like the big butch truck driver woman who doesn't say hardly anything, you know, she just comes at you with a toffee hammer or whatever. But it's just that whole thing of, you know, it has a lot of stuff that's going on underneath, and a lot of the, you know, the reference points and the visual points and just the simple fact that it gets under your skin, this one, I think, in a big way. And I think probably if you had to ask a lot of people what they think the best episode of season 8 is, I think Roadrunners is either going to be at the top or it's going to be in the top 3, personally.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It would probably be, I'm trying to think now, is it my top? It may be my top. I'm now worrying that I've said another episode of my favorite episode of the season after this. But I think it might be.
Yeah, it's up there. So yeah, Roadrunners is a, I'd go as far as to say it's a classic X-File, really. And it shows what the 8th season can do. So yeah, damn good one. Two pretty decent ones. You know, season 8 is starting on a good footing, really. So yeah, it's been really good talking to you anyway, Darren, about this. We'll be back later together in season 8 talking about another couple of episodes. So that'll be fun. Two very different episodes from these two.
Well, you're right, they don't have banana slugs in them. There's sadly, the yellow banana slug did not become sort of a recurring. It didn't get its tombs to its squeeze, unfortunately.
Well, we do have season 11. You never know. yeah, we'll be back soon in the future. But Darren, until then, do you want to direct people to where you are and what you're doing on the internet?
Oh, cool. You can find me online at the Movie Blog, which is spelt with a zero in movie. I also host the 250, which is a movie podcast, which Tony has guested on a couple of times, and we hope to have him on again relatively soon as well. I've written a book, which is about the X-Files, which is Opening the X-Files, a critical history of the original series, which is available from Amazon and anywhere where good books are, even not so good books, are sold. Yeah, I am the master of the pitch.
Yeah, you've got that down. Yeah, definitely. Okay, yeah. Well, you can find the XCast, as usual, on Twitter, at the X_cast. And check out our Facebook group, our page, at the XCast, X-Files Podcast, and our group, the XCast Basement. You know, for lots more chatter in there. And, yeah, just join us and join in the fun as we race towards Season 11. Tomorrow, you are going to be joined by Carl and Baz, who are going to be talking about Invocation and Red Rum. And actually, Red Rum might be my favourite episode of the season. I love Red Rum.
Well, I'm glad that I was the one who was hesitant about committing to this. I like this.
Yeah, I'm going to probably say this I'm glad. Every week. Oh, yeah, actually, Red Rum. No, Vianin. No. You know. Yeah. But yeah, so two good ones. Two good ones there for you to enjoy, guys.
So if you're betting on Tony's favourite episode of the season, I think Existence is a safe bet.
Yeah, obviously. But yeah, until then, guys, thanks for listening. And remember, trust no one.